Welcome, folks, to the 6th of April Aries Working Group call. We are glad you're here. We have a really cool agenda today, so we'll get started. This is a Hyperledger call, and the antitrust policy and the Hyperledger Code of Conduct are in effect. Be excellent to each other, and let's avoid uncovering our work with any legal issues. In the chat, I'll paste it again, is the link to the agenda. You're welcome to make any adjustments that you like, including, if you like, adding yourselves to the attendees list. Is there anyone new today who would like to introduce themselves? All right. Well, we're glad you're all here. IW is the announcement that we've got. You should go. It's excellent. Any other announcements that I should have on the list? Perfect.
Actually, Sam, I'm going to call up something. Sorry.
Sure. Yeah.
Somebody here is Martin Saint-Pierre from Quebec, who is one of the things I wanted to call out is the work he's doing on overlays capture architecture. And so if anyone's interested in that, work is going on there, and Martin is making some really good progress. Very interesting stuff, basically being able to have an issuer or a schema publisher create semantic information about a credential, most notably multilingual information, and then being able to have a wallet grab that and be able to present the information, extra information about each data element, each claim, and so on. So we're starting to make some really good progress there, and Martin's doing a great job and leading that.
Super cool. Mike, your hands up.
Yeah, I failed to mention during announcements, Cardia is doing their demo day on April 14th during their normal meeting time. So if anybody missed the Interopathon or would like to see some of the stuff that was worked on there, that's what we'll be doing next week.
Awesome. Mike, can you hunt down a link so that we can add it to the announcements?
Oh, yeah. And then it's at 10 a.m. if anyone cares.
10 a.m. Mountain?
Mountain, yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Any releases or work status updates on related projects that anyone wants to share? Everyone just really wants to get to the presentations today, which is awesome. Okay, we have three things on the agenda today, and I apologize to the folks from Animo when they pinged me and said, "Hey, can we do this?" I had forgotten that Stephen Kern had a planned topic for supporting Data Indie and Aries. So let's get to the topics, and if we need to overflow into next week, hopefully that will be okay. We've got a lot to talk about. So first is Sheldon sharing his work on the Aries mobile test harness. This is the regular test harness, but specifically designed for mobile applications. Also, a discussion with Stephen supporting Data Indie and Aries, and then the Data Indie method. And then Animo wanted to share some work on an Aries CLI that they've been working on. We've got some links there. Any adjustments we want to make before we get going? All right, let's do it. Sheldon, are you ready?
Yeah, sure am. Let me share my screen. Oh,
have the con.
I cannot start screen share. Let's see.
I quit mine already.
Okay.
If you can't.
So my name's Sheldon Regular. I've been working with I might be new here. I don't know if I've come to this Aries working group meeting before or not, but anyway, I've been working with the BC government for a couple years now, working on testing infrastructure for Aries technologies, and currently working with Ontario and BC on their Aries wallet implementations and supporting the testing of that. So what has come in the last few months is a specific test harness with a focus on mobile. The goal, well, actually, you know what I'm going to do? Because this takes a little while to run, I'm going to start up the test running to show, just so it doesn't look like I'm doing smoke and mirrors. And you can see it actually running while I'm doing the slideshow. So I'm going to start a couple agents here. And then run the tests. Okay, so I'll just set this going. I'll come back and explain what's going on here in a few minutes. So the goal here was to take the best mobile testing practices and Aries agent testing practices and combine them to create a collaborative testing platform and environment for validating any Aries mobile wallet end-to-end from the holder's perspective. So it's wallet focused, not really like an issuer or verifier focused. Utilizing any or multiple issuers and verifiers, and can run automated tests on varied supported real devices for your mobile app. Right now, the feature set includes you can test any mobile Aries mobile wallet, interfaces with Aries agent test harness supported Aries frameworks. So you can test your wallet with any Aries framework acting as an issuer or verifier. So that's Akapai, AFJ, Aries framework, .NET, AFGO, and whatever else people have controllers or back channels written for in the Aries agent test harness. The test with a few conventions can be issuer or verifier agnostic. So you can run the same wallet test with any Aries agent test harness issuer or verifier. We have an agent interface that can be quickly implemented, and we can support any new issuer or verifier, even if it's web-based with no API, and turn and run your existing tests on that new issuer and verifier. It also utilizes a page object model to isolate tests from app screens. So helps a little bit with maintenance. You only have one place to go to if the page changes, you change your page object. So the architecture here, it consists of Python, which is the language the tests are written in. Behave is the test execution engine. Appium, which is the bridge between the test code and controlling the app. Right now we're using Sauce Labs as the device cloud service. And we have a ton of real devices we can test the wallet against in that cloud service. And we are using Allure for our formal reporting engine. So this borrows some concepts from the Aries agent test harness, but it is where the Aries agent test harness is focused on the core protocols and the roles therein. This is primarily focused on testing the wallet. And it uses the issuers and verifiers to get the job done of testing the wallet. So, you know, you're not really going to use this test harness to test an issuer unless it includes a wallet in that infrastructure or in that stack. So, it's a set of BDD or acceptance test driven development testing concepts that come in here. So Behave is that engine for that. So these BDD test scripts are based on your wallet's user stories or requirements and acceptance criteria. If the features that you're basing these tests off actually include behavioral specification written in what's called Gherkin, it's probably wise to do so. And if it's done well, you've got some direct correlation from executed tests to the requirements or stories themselves. And in that, at that point, you have what could be called a set of executable specifications for your wallet app. The BDD steps are calling the page objects, which in turn holds Appium calls that call the device service to manipulate the wallet app. BDD steps are also calling an agent interface. So there's an interface here that you can be implemented to call the issuer or verifier either through an API, or Selenium can be used to actually call a web-based interface if you have a web-based issuer or verifier. And of course, it's integrated with Allure reports. I'll show that later as well. So one key thing here that allows us to be sort of agent agnostic is the agent abstraction layer, which is really just an agent interface factory inside of the test harness. So we have an issuer agent interface and a verifier agent interface, and you just implement those for whatever frame or whatever issuer or verifier you need to go against. So right now there is an interface implemented for Aries Agent Test Harness agents that can communicate with the Aries Agent Test Harness back channel. So you get all of the benefits of that and all of the frameworks in Aries Agent Test Harness. But it's not very difficult to write those interfaces. So, I mean, if you have anything, we have an issuer, as this is called a verifier here, but we do have an issuer in a cross-Canada network called Candy network, and I could write an interface to that issuer, a web-based interface using Selenium calls. And really, the behave tests know nothing about the underlying framework or how it's implemented. They're just calling, create invitation or send credential, send proof request, that kind of thing. So very, very simple calls, should be minimal set of calls to get the job done. All of the handling of the agent stuff is done in the agent interface. So the tests remain simple and a few calls to the issuers or verifiers. So tests are executed with different agents by passing command line parameters. So we have issuer here and we prefix it with the type of issuer we have, plus an endpoint to that issuer. And same for the verifier in the command line. We give the type and then an endpoint to whatever the interface needs to communicate with that issuer. Aries Mobile Test Harness does not manage any agents at all. Everything is external. So you always have to point it to a running agent. Or running verifier and issuer. So just a little bit deeper on the agent abstraction. It's just an interface factory and the Aries Mobile Test Harness calls to create an issuer agent or a verifier agent, and they just implement simple interfaces. Get issuer type. You're going to create an invitation. Are we connected? Send credential, then the verifier is like, well, it would have connection stuff in here as well, but get issuer type and send proof. So that's pretty much how that works and how the tests don't need to know about the issuer or verifier. So the demo, so let's see, this should still be running. Yep. So what I did at first, because because Aries Mobile Test Harness doesn't manage agents, and I have an interface for Aries Agent Test Harness, I'm just using Aries Agent Test Harness to start up a couple of agents. One is Acme, if you know the roles inside of Aries Agent Test Harness, and one is Bob. And I'll use each one of these, each for issuer and verifier in the mobile test harness. And I've told it to connect to a ledger that the wallet knows about. And I'm also passing a config file in that allows Acapi to run with a bunch of auto options on, which is more suited for mobile testing. This is new, and starting these agents with a start command is new in Aries Agent Test Harness. So you can use those agents as services for anything outside of testing. So this does not run any tests inside of Aries agent test harness. And you can see these are running here. And they also have an NGROC tunnel started as well. So all I did then was run these tests with the Aries mobile test harness, which we have a managed script for. So manage run. Sorry, I should say this as well. There's a build command. Dot manage build when you pass a dash W and wallet to it. So what this does, so the Aries agent test harness or the Aries mobile test harness can take, can have tests for multiple wallets in it. And when you build, you're going to tell it what wallet you want tests. So it will then isolate and build a container that contains just that wallet infrastructure. So page objects, steps, and feature files for that wallet itself. But after that's built, we're going to be run. So it's manage run. This region is just a Sauce Labs environment variable that it needs to know where to put where the server is. So we're passing a dash D for device service. And right now it's Sauce Labs. There is provisioning in there to use any device service, but Sauce Labs right now is the one with the best image injection support. So for scanning QR codes. So that's why Sauce Labs was the first pick. There's also a bunch of other ones like Browser Stack, or I think Amazon has one, Microsoft has one as well. But something like Browser Stack was very in its infancy of doing image injection and QR code scanning, that kind of thing. So then passing in a key and a username for the Sauce Labs for our device cloud. We're going to pass a platform, which is currently going to run on iOS, and the app, the actual app name that has to be loaded up into the device service. There's scripts in the test harness, or one script in the test harness that uploads your app to Sauce Labs. Then we're going to point the issuer to the ones that are running from Aries Agent Test Harness, and that's its endpoint locally. And the verifier is also going to be Aries Agent Test Harness, and that's its endpoint as well. The tests we're going to run are for BC Wallet, and it is just a credential offer test. So when it starts up...
Hey, Sheldon, let me pause you real quick.
Go ahead.
This is recorded. Yep. So I'm going to not post the recording until you've rotated that key out.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Yep.
Perfect. So it tells us what feature we're running with. And it starts off with some capabilities we pass to Appium to tell it what to work with over on the Sauce Labs side. So, you know, like that platform name, here's the app name. We're going to use any iPhone that is 15.3 and above. We have our Sauce Labs image injection stuff enabled, auto accept alerts. So this, what this does is auto accept things like the camera. If the camera, our first access of the camera, you get this permissions question, say allow or deny. So this actually bypasses it and accepts it. So you can do the camera's QR code scanning, name of the test, and other things. So then Appium returns a set of capabilities that are actual that it picked when it did it. So all this stuff here are just stuff you can reference. You get a test report URL in here as well that you can see in Sauce Labs. But then it runs the test. And you can see these are the test runs as a natural plain language, so you can read this as a requirement for your test. So given the user's completed the onboarding screens and the user's accepted terms and conditions and a PIN has been set up and we have a connection successfully made and the user has a credential offer, when they select accept and is informed that it's on the way, And once the credential arrives, that the credential is added to your wallet and they select done and brought to a list of credentials, and the credentials are accepted and at the top of the list. So this is a full test that just ran as I was doing that presentation and passed. So I can take it to Sauce Labs and log in. I could have watched this. So when this runs, I could open up Sauce Labs and watch the video actually being recorded and running on the real device in the cloud. So you can see we're up here in Sauce Labs. We have a passed test. Holder accepts the credential offer. In here, we get a video for every test that runs. So we can go back and look. We have logs, system logs that we can look at for every test run. But if I click any of these events, the video might be large at this point. Take a little bit of time to load. I may have pretty slow internet right now. Tower's been going in and out, but maybe that's what I snap. Oh, here it comes. So here you can just see this is at the point where I did a find element by accessibility ID, a view. So view credential. This is a new credential that came in. You can play this if you want, but it sometimes it's a little slow. So I'm not going to actually play it for you. But here we have a schema. Here's the credential is on the way. These are the actual steps that ran through the wallet. Calling that real issuer to issue the credential. In here, there's some insights in here to see some test history, all that kind of thing, or pass and error and stuff. But what's really a reporting is really here in Allure. So this is running in two CI pipelines, one for Ontario, one for BC, and creating Allure reports for us. So we get trends over time, and we can actually drill in to these and see the tests. One cool thing here is that we can actually, in the results itself, for fail tests and for pass tests, we have a link to the actual tests, and we have an actual configuration of what the properties were that Appium sent over. So we know a history of the device and its settings that it was run against in case it failed. So here was a failed one here. We have all of that information for that failed test. Any questions so far before I go back to the slides?
Hey, Shell, quick question. How long do you think it would take? What does it take a normal Devi type person to go from zero to running tests? Is it that you've got to get the Sauce Labs stuff? Is that probably the hardest part? Is it just running stuff?
Yeah, you need a Sauce Labs account, which can be gotten. You can get that for free, okay. Unfortunately. But unfortunately, you can't do the QR code scanning with a free account. So yeah, oh. You do have to. Yeah, you do have to get a paid account, which I think is $199 a month or something like that.
For the not cheap. Okay, yeah. And then everything else is just sort of run in Docker and all that?
Yeah. It's on the Ontario side, they had a new tester come aboard, and he was at the beginning of the week, and he's already very fluent running tests, no problem.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. So there's three ways to utilize this. So you can write tests in the Aries Mobile Test Harness repo, which the BC Wallet stuff is inside of that repo right now. Or you can create a separate repo and have the submodule of Aries Mobile Test Harness. This is the pattern that Ontario is following right now. And then you can also, of course, create a separate repo and clone Aries Mobile Test Harness into your environment. So the status right now, of course, as I mentioned, we got two tests being actively developed for two Aries wallets. There's another one slated shortly that people are interested in starting up in the next month or so. It's running in two mobile wallet build pipelines. The repo is already in Hyperledger. You can start tests quickly with the default credentials and proofs for Aries Agent Test Harness. So it is probably wise if, which I've done in Aries Mobile Test Harness interface, if you don't pass anything into those methods in the interface, that it will just use a default credential, a default proof request, so that you can get going really, really fast without having to create a bunch of data for your credential and stuff. So anybody creating those interfaces for your agents, it might be a good idea to have some default data infrastructure in there. It's documented, so of course it could be better, but should make it easy for writing tests and running tests, along with creating those agent interfaces. And like I said, the BC wallet tests are contained in the Aries Mobile Test Harness repo, so it's a good reference to get going for your own wallet. Short-term priorities. So this, Stephen, this might go directly to your question about Sauce Labs or having an account, but short-term priority is to have local device simulator or emulator support. So, and I got really close to this, but I didn't quite get there, and I had to go on to writing tests for BC Wallet. So this is still outstanding. We should be able to write, in the one of the flags on the command line for run, just say local instead of Sauce Labs, and we should be able to run the same tests against an emulator or simulator or a real connected device to your system. The reason I couldn't get it going, I was trying to figure out what kind of minimal environment you would need to run this, but it does seem that you need a full-blown app development environment in order to get this stuff to work. Which is good for app developers, but for someone like myself that I'm as primarily focused on testing, I don't necessarily have a full app development on my system. But it looks like to do this, we're going to need a full app development environment on your system to do it. We'd like to create agent interfaces for other issuers and verifiers. And we'd like to externalize the test data for credentials and proofs. So the provisioning is there to do this. It just hasn't been tried yet. We're still using the default credentials and proofs. Long-term priorities is to extend beyond Sauce Labs device service. So if you want to use BrowserStack or Amazon, it shouldn't be a problem. Right now, you'd have to write code inside of the harness itself to bypass Sauce Labs stuff and create stuff for another one. But it might be a good idea that we follow the same factory pattern we use for the agent interfaces to support different device services. So that's still outstanding. That's it. Questions?
Timo, your hand's up.
I have a question on mainly about, because this looks really, really cool and I think it would be really useful, on the reusability of the tests, because I think Ontario and BC are both building on Bifold, right? And some of the test steps were quite detailed in enters the pin, then presses this button, which between wallets could be very different. So what would be the step on where you need to customize for your own implementation? Would that be I write my own test cases, but with the already available steps? Or is it intended that we could reuse the same test, but for multiple wallets, basically like we do with Aries Agent Test Harness?
Yeah, I originally thought we probably could, given that I'm also working with Ontario and BC. It's becoming more apparent that that is going to be a little bit difficult, simply because even though the apps are really similar, there's flow differences that are different. Like even just, you know, instead of one pop-up message, you get two pop-up messages with an OK button, and somebody doesn't do an OK, a done button. You know what I mean? And this requires a little bit more finesse. It could be done, but I'm not sure of the benefit. If you did do it, the place that it would be different, like if you wrote some generic tests that could work for any wallet, the interface level that you would use to differentiate between the apps is the page object layer. So where did I put that? So the page objects here are just, you know, we could say, okay, here's the generic test, but I want to use BC Wallet's page objects, or I want to use Timo's wallets page objects. So that way, it knows what to do with those pages. And if there's any idiosyncrasies between the two, it could be handled inside the page objects. So think of these page objects as the, as say the Aries agent test harness back channel kind of thing, where you would handle all of that kind of custom stuff for your particular agent or wallet. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think it indeed can be. You can keep it really general, but then you maybe miss some important flows that could happen in wallet. So the question is more like, do you want to generalize it? Because maybe it's better to do a bit more work and be able to cover all flows.
Yeah, to be honest, I honestly think it is less work to probably create your own set of, like, just copy down an existing set of tests, modify it for yourself and run it, than it is to try to make a set of tests that are generic enough to run across multiple wallets. That's my own opinion right now. I wouldn't mind trying it, but that's my opinion right now. Any other questions?
If you'll forgive a stupid beginner question here, what needs to be put into the mobile app to support this? Or does the emulator that runs in SAS Labs able to just inspect the screen and cause button pushes without any changes to the mobile app source code?
Yeah, no change. Actual production level app running in SAS Labs and Appium uses OS level hooks to push stuff and do things and get text and all that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
One of the main reasons we went with this infrastructure, rather, like there's other ones that you have to put hooks into your code itself that you can really get under the covers. But at that point, you're not really testing your production app. You're testing some variation of testing app, not a production app. So, anything else? Cool. Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate you allowing me some of your time.
Thank you for the demo. That's fantastic. Really good. Steven, next up, you were on the agenda. Unless you'd prefer that Animo goes first with the CLI.
I wouldn't mind. If it's okay, I will take the time on this one because I would like people thinking about this and moving this forward.
Let's do it.
So sorry about that. So let me share a screen. Whoops, I was going to send this to Sheldon to say, hey, make sure you clean out your, rotate your key. But you've made it clear to him already. All right, where am I going? Okay, I got two out here. This is the one I want. I was just putting this together before. Okay, sorry about that. That took longer than I wanted, but everyone can see my screen. Yep. Okay. So we've done BCGov put out a code with us, a challenge to the community to build out Did Indy. Indicio and Dominic Verner won that challenge, and they've spent the last month and a half or so building out Did Indy. So this is sort of an update on where we are with Did Indy and what's left to get this into use. And the what's left to me is somewhat of a mystery. And that's why I want to talk about this a bit and get people thinking about this and try to get some motion on it as well. So the goals of the Did Indy initiative. So in the beginning, there was Did Solve, and people thought there was going to be one network, one Indy network, and that's all we would ever need. And so we've been running for the last few years with this Did and these methods where we assume that the caller always knows what network they're using, and they only use one for a long time. So you either use, you know, be sovereign test or you use sovereign staging or you use sovereign production, but you always use one for any agent. And then we realized, okay, that's not possible. And the folks from LISI showed us that, well, you could actually use multiple by having a set of networks you know about and just checking all of them for the objects that you want, the DID that you want to resolve or something like that. And so most have implemented that, not all, but most frameworks have implemented that and allowed that to work. And so for the last 6 to 8 months, it's been pretty common that you can actually, without forcing the user to pick what network they are on for this particular transaction or this particular instance of a wallet, they can use multiple. But the goals was namespace DIDs across all indie instances, some sort of indie network discovery mechanism. So that's what I've talked about there. In the course of doing that, we realized we'd really like to have full DID doc support. Indie was created before the DID core spec was started, let alone finished. And in that time, the only thing that's been done is sort of a convention for how you do DID docs. So we'd like to have full DID doc support. In addition to namespace DIDs, we want namespaces across all anoncred objects. So schemas, cred defs, and so on. And then support for some important resolution time parameters. And I realize I didn't fix the spelling on this, but version ID and version time in particular. So being able to get a DID at some point back in its history, being able to get it either via an ID or via time, the time. What was the DID that I'm interested in back when I got a connection established or something like that? So those were the goals we had. So what I wanna talk about is sort of where we are with accomplishments. First of all, at the time we started, those were what we wanted to do. The DID indie spec has come along. So I've got links here to the specification itself, to the repo where we drive it, and then the DID, a thing called the DID net, Indie Networks repository, which is currently in ID Union, but will be shifted over to Hyperledger. And the Indie DID Networks is basically a curated list of DID Indie Networks with readmes and Genesis file. And when I say curated, means there are maintainers on the repo and they will accept pull requests. And they will make sure that the pull requests are about DID Indie Networks, but they won't worry about whether they like, dislike, or not the DID Indie Network. And then there would be any dispute on the acceptance or rejection of a PR would go up through the Hyperledger. So nobody could update somebody else's DID network. It would only be the owners of that network based on the community knowledge and things like that. So that's the idea of the DID Indie Networks. But basically, for every DID known named DID or sort of Indie network, there would be an entry in here posted by the maintainers of that network that provide information about the network and the Genesis files necessary to connect to it. So that's the discovery mechanism, if you will. So that's where we are with the DID Indie spec. Indie Node has had a bunch of updates done to it. There was a really good presentation done Tuesday by Daniel Bloom and the Indicio team on what they've done. And there's a link to that recording here and a presentation as well available. Sam as well, maybe as additional recordings. So new DID items when creating it. So there's a thing called, so when you're creating a DID on Indie, when you're creating a NIM as it's called on Indie in the code, you can add a DID.content and a, and when it's received, a client receiving a DID off an Indie network can assemble a DID doc content, can assemble the DID doc by combining the key, the DID and the key information and where it's housed with the DID doc content the client supplies. So there's an algorithm for merging the two together, just basic, you know, put the two together, make sure that you still have JSON and that you that a couple of checks, minor checks, are done to make sure it's a valid DID doc, but not exhaustive, and that gets returned as the DID doc. So now you can put anything you want in a DID doc and post it on Indy, and it stays with the DID itself versus the old approach, which was to a convention to use in a trib. So that's good. There's also versioning to support self-certifying DIDs. So this is a concept that Indy kind of had by convention, but wasn't really enforced, which is a binding between the DID and the original var key used. So there's now a mechanism where you can add an attribute to your NIM transaction, your DID transaction, to create the DID in the first place, and say, I am using a particular algorithm to bind the two, and the ledger will verify that that binding is in effect before it writes it. So if you claim to be having a self-certified DID, but you didn't implement it correctly, the transaction would be rejected. If it is validated, it gets written, and anyone who looks at that DID from then on, as long as they trust the ledger's evaluation of it, can know that this has been a self-certified, or they can go back and check it, of course, but they can know that it's been self-certified. And that would carry on, because the ledger also enforces that when you change it, you have to prove control over it before you can change it. So you have to know the private key in order to rotate keys going forward. So it is a self-certified DID from that point on, and with a chain associated with it. So that's an addition. Support for ledger returning point in time DIDs, support for the version ID and version time attributes in the DID spec, works for DIDs and attribs. Because in Indy, all the other objects cannot be modified, you can't write the same object again. We don't need that support. You always specify what object you want, you get it back. There isn't, you know, two versions that are rotations of them. So that's not needed on other than DIDs and attribs. One of the things we did want in the original goal was objects could be on different ledgers. We realized that the only one that made sense was to have a schema object on one ledger and a cred def on other ledgers, so that we are sharing the same schema, even if it's on a different ledger than we're using to route the issuing of the credential. So hopefully everyone knows that what I mean by that. We did not do that. So the source schema object used by a cred def must be on the same ledger that the cred def itself is on. That was obvious for the other objects, like the RevReg. It must be on the same ledger as the cred def. That makes sense. The schema, it would have been nice to do that, but we didn't do that. It was just too complicated to figure out how it would be validated, how the ledger would cross over and take a look to make sure that the schema was over on the other ledger, and so on and so forth. Just way too complicated. So we dropped that feature. Note over here, this should have been an animation. Sorry for my presentation, but nothing about namespace DIDs here. So anything in Indy Node comes, it basically either doesn't get the namespacing or just ignores it. Everything that's on a ledger is specific to that ledger, and it really doesn't know about what ledger it is and what it's called. So that feature is not implemented at the Indy Node level. It's implemented at the Indy VDR level, at the client layer that's talking directly to the ledger. So Indy VDR has been updated to support the new items in the NIM transaction, DID doc and version. Support for the DID and attribute versions is done. Namespace DIDs. So between the client and Indy VDR, whatever Aries agent is calling Indy VDR, namespace DIDs are used or can be used. DID to ledger uses non-namespace. In other words, that should have been Indy VDR to ledger uses non-space DIDs. The VDR knows what ledger it's talking to and therefore just communicates with it in non-namespaced identifiers. Hopefully, again, that makes sense. There also was added to IndieVDR a DID resolver service. Given all the DID identifiers in the Indie DID method spec, return the associated object. So there's there are ways to define, you know, DIDs, obviously, but also schemas and cred defs that are in a DID URL fashion with a path. And those are all supported in this DID resolver. And so for DIDs, it assembles and returns a DID doc according to, by combining the key information plus the DID doc content in the DID to return a full DID doc. As well, the DID resolver clones internally the Indie DID network. So it has a local copy of Indie DID networks, and that enables it to find a list of Indie networks, including the Genesis files necessary to connect to them. So that's all done in IndieVDR. I'm hoping to have a presentation next week from Dominic to go over and provide a demo of that, and I'll get another recording that we can post. So all of that leads to more is needed in non-creds updates. So what's needed is, yeah, we've got all this support in there, but Aries agents process objects that contain these identifiers, and they are not ready to recognize namespaced objects. So you cannot put into a presentation request a creddef ID colon, you know, in the restrictions, creddef ID colon and a namespace DID with a path URL for that DID, for that creddef based object. So we need to get that in there. Basically, namespace DIDs, so we know what network the DID is on. Namespace DIDs with paths for the non-DID objects, such as schemas, creddefs, revocation registry, and so on. So what we need is basically to build in support for both the old and the new identifiers in all of the shared objects that are floating around in an Indie Aries ecosystem, and be able to process both of them as best we can. So if you get an old one, you might have to use multi-network method by looking on all of them and finding it. If you get a new one, you know exactly what network is on, and so you can go directly to that network and find it. So basically extend the current multi-ledger support to allow selection of ledgers to use, possibly even dynamically adding ledgers in a running agent. So you're running along and you've got a network, you know, a sovereign network that you're using, and you're doing a bunch of receipt of, you know, you're a verifier and you get a presentation request or a presentation, and it contains sovereign ones like you've seen before. And then all of a sudden you get an Indicio a credential claims from a credential rooted in an DCO network or ledger. And so you can dynamically add that to your list that you resolve and use and get there. And then extend the storage to track the ledger of a given object. I'm not sure again how we would do that, but basically when you store a schema or you store a creddef in the storage of an agent, you also want to be able to record which network it is on. So when you, if you have to go refresh it or you go to use it, you know what network it is from, and you can grab the right instance. So you could actually have the same item stored on different networks and reference the correct one. And then client versus IndieVDR handling of pools and refreshes. So IndieVDR sort of leaves it up to the client to say, oh, I want to use this pool and I want to use this refresh. And I want to refresh it at this time. A refresh means simply grabbing the Genesis file and then reconnecting with the network and finding all of the latest nodes of a network. So you have a full list of all the nodes. And so as those change over time, you maintain an updated list of those. So basically what you get is a controller talks to an ACAPI instance, talks to multiple ledgers. So this is more or less what we have today. And we're able to have those. A non-creds documents contains references to ledger-based objects. And what we need is to allow for putting in did indie-based references into those objects. As far as I can see, it means being able to update a non-creds so that it understands when new objects are used, which implies that the secure storage like Askar, which is handling the keys and the identifiers themselves, be updated to handle the new items and store them correctly. That's my impression of what's needed, but open to questions. So the challenge I've got is to put to the community is sort of, can we get a document out there and a path to implementing these in the different frameworks to make sure we're able to use multiple networks and use those identifiers as they're intended, which is to allow you to go to know exactly where a given identifier, where the objects related to a given identifier can be found. So with that, that's what I had. Open to questions, comments, and suggestions for how to move forward and where I've got this wrong. Or to turn it back to you, Sam.
So Timo had asked me about how we earlier, the topic that he suggested, which we can of course pick up next week, is kind of the plan, is how we move from this sort of the self-certified unqualified DIDs into actual DIDs throughout Aries. That dovetails quite nicely with this topic. Do you want to tease any of those concepts, Timo, or should we wait with anticipation for next week?
I think it may be a bit longer discussion, but if there's no questions from other people, sure.
Happy also to pick that up next week if we want to sort of digest what's going on here.
Yeah,
maybe better.
The nice part is that this has been a long time coming and it's here, which means that we can actually do a lot of internal cleanup implementations. One of the things that Stephen mentioned that I wanted to highlight was that some mobile applications now that make a single network assumption will need to sort of update. There's lots of things to update, but one of the things they can update is the fact that you don't really have to sort of select the ledger that you're on necessarily. As holders, we don't really record things to ledgers, so it's really just resolving things from other ledgers. So DIDs that you encounter, and then the other related objects, et cetera. Stephen, I wanted to ask a clarifying question. You mentioned that we did not have the ability to point from a cred def to a schema on a different ledger, but is the plan to use network identifiers, that was worded poorly, to point to schemas in cred defs?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So we still specify which ledger they on, but at the moment it just has to, they just both have to be on the same network, the same ledger.
Yeah. I thought I had put that into this presentation. I had actually, I hope I haven't posted a, it's in this one, and I thought I had updated these, but just so people know, so these are what identifiers look like today. So you've got sort of a pile of colons in a claim def, the DID that created the claim def, the type, the signature, and then other parameters, and basically these move into these formats where you've got the DID itself, and then that created it, and then this path from it. to say, this is an OnCreds V1. It's a schema object, and here are the identifiers for that schema object. And these are the same identifiers that that exist today. So all we're doing is sort of changing the format from being a bunch of colons to a bunch of slashes, what it amount to. But you're using, techniques identified in the DID core spec to do that, to identify all the objects. So that's how it's done.
Perfect. So from a Holder mobile wallet app perspective, these help you to understand which network these are resolved against.
Yes. You still have the namespaced item here to tell you exactly what network it's on.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Cool. So with that, we're about out of time. Stephen, appreciate this. This is really good. And BCGov's done a lot to promote and make this a reality. And so this is very cool that this is happening. Next week we have the ARI CLI and a continuation of this discussion that Timo can lead about what needs to happen and what we do as a community to deprecate the unqualified DIDs that have been being used. And now that we have a new method to make this happen, another related piece of that discussion the anticipated rate of rollout of these update to Indie Node across various networks, and then how we actually know when we're there from that perspective. So good conversation that we can have next week. Thanks everyone for coming, and thanks everyone for presenting and doing all the great work that you do in the community. We're grateful you're here, and we hope you have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks
everybody.